Broadcasting from the super-secret underground bunker at World Headquarters, this is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
Stand by. Accessing primary security protocols. Your access has been approved. Welcome to Level 117.
Welcome, everyone. Level 117 back in session. We put the handcuffs away.
For now.
Because we don't go for that kind of indoctrination here.
That's what he wants you to think.
Sky.
Send help.
Hail Hydra.
Send help. Send help.
Greetings, everyone. Jason Hunt here, along with my aides.
Good evening.
Tim Harvey.
Hello.
And Dan Handley.
Hello.
The usual suspects in the studio tonight. We have been doing our Agent Carter. I was about to say Agent Recap. Our Agent Carter recaps. That could be a
new
show.
Agent Recap.
Agent Recap. There we go.
Whose main talent is to stand there and tell you what just happened.
And it could be just like James Bond, where anybody can play Agent Recap, and we recast,
over and over.
Or like Doctor Who, where you recast, and you have a regeneration scene or
there
whatever.
You go.
Agent Recap. Oh, yeah, that's got potential.
It does have potential.
That's got potential. All right, so we are discussing Agent Carter, and over the last few weeks, we've been joined by various members of the Sci-Fi for Chicks podcast cast, and tonight we're a little thin. It's just us.
It's the usual suspects.
So let's talk Agent Carter, because tonight's episode, The Iron Ceiling, shifts a lot of the show.
Oh, it shifts the entire show.
Yeah.
It basically takes your every social dynamic in this show that we've seen up until now got turned in its ear. Every bit of your the casual sexism.
Yeah.
And some degrees misogyny. Really got a everybody shifted tonight. Everybody who was experiencing that, and for those who were on Peggy's side in the office,
yeah,
also got a shift. So it kind of was like, okay, let's tip everything on its side.
Yeah, almost upside down.
Except nobody showed up with a goatee. So we're not in the mirror universe yet.
Huh.
But it is all has been flipped. Tonight's episode, just to recap a little bit, we've got in the episode prior to this, the end of that episode, the magic typewriter, what's crossed over from Fringe,
mm-hmm.
has come to life and started tapping out a message. Now we are dealing with the aftermath of that. Everybody's scrambling in the office. Peggy, of course, the last one to arrive to work.
Of course.
As she does,
mm-hmm.
because she always arrives last.
Why does she do that?
She feels like it.
How could she get away with that?
It's her prerogative.
Well, see, that's my question. I was like, wait a minute. If you're trying to prove something, why are you always late to work?
I don't know.
Because the writers. Fashionably
late.
The writers.
Yeah. That's what
she had,
it is.
She had to take other meetings before she came
so
to work.
So she shows up. Everybody's in a mad scramble. What's going on? And we have the brain trust in the conference room trying to figure out the message.
And they have called for a code breaker.
Code breaker, cryptanalysis cryptographer. Turing couldn't even crack this
The Turing test doesn't would have applied, yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And Peggy walks in and says, did you account for the code being in Russian? the original words being in Russian. So, of course, naturally, Peggy just knocks it out. Just
whammity bam bam.
Boom. Yes, exactly. Say that again.
Whammity bam bam.
Exactly like that. And it takes her first step toward proving that she actually knows what she's doing in front of everybody. Scandalous. Next thing you know, she'll be wearing pants.
And using the men's locker room.
She ends up wearing pants.
And in the men's locker room.
In the men's locker room, because she manages to get herself assigned to the task force that goes over into Russia to figure out what it is the Leviathan is actually doing over there, because apparently this message is that Leviathan is wanting to buy technology from Howard Stark for $100,000. I'd take a tenth of that, and I'd be okay.
Especially in those dollars.
Yeah, especially, yes. And so they managed to do that. And of course, well, who could we get to help us? And she makes a phone call. And here's the 107th. Commandos.
You can go along if you can get the Howling Commandos to go to come.
Yes.
Yeah.
Fine.
Yeah. It's like, all right.
Okay.
Make a phone call.
Yep. Just excuse me, let me call my people. So she calls her peeps, meets her peeps over in Poland. They cross the border. And there's the obligatory scene like we saw in Aliens, where you have the lieutenant in charge, the commanding officer in charge, is of course the outsider to the group, and all of the grunts and the soldiers and the people who have been in the trenches are kind of, you know, who are you and why are you here and what makes you think that you can? Oh, that's a nice shiny bar on your shoulder. That doesn't mean you're in charge, because everybody is assuming the Peggy's in charge and acting so. And Peggy, for her part, I thought it was really interesting because, and we can talk about this a little bit at the campfire, she actually does something to bring Thompson, because Thompson is assigned command of the task force. Wet behind the ears. He's still young.
Yep.
He's still so young for me. Yep. I mean, I know he's in his 30s. I know that, but still.
Well, it's interesting because I think that we end up with a... he is reacting in many ways to the fact that everyone is deferring to Peggy. He's not getting, you know, he's not reacting in a particularly big way initially, but he's definitely reacting to the fact that they're all kind of like, yeah, okay, that's nice. Hey, Peggy, how are you?
Yeah.
You know,
it's like, wait a minute, you guys fought with Captain America. Not as long as she did.
Yeah.
Now we got to start looking at Peggy a little bit differently.
Right.
We think.
For more reasons than just that, though, too.
Right.
For things that happen later in this episode.
And I think it's interesting that Thompson knows Peggy's measurements.
I think he made them up.
Lucky.
She'd make a crack about his being not being very good with numbers.
Well, so he's guessing.
I think
it was a very generous guess. So... he's still looking at Peggy like, you know, she's the one that gets coffee. Why are they, wait, what? What's going on? Wait, so
I'm
in charge. I'm supposed to be in charge.
But, you know, the amount of sexist jokes and so forth that went on in this episode didn't feel over the top to me. This actually felt like a realistic level.
And really, from the Howling Commandos' point of view, when they're doing it, because Dum Dum did a little bit of it too.
Mm-hmm. They're just ribbing her.
They're just ribbing a friend of her. She's one of them.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And you can definitely feel the dynamic is different.
Yes,
with them than it is for everybody.
Well, and it's very clearly a sense of you know, I'm picking on my friend versus I think you should fetch me the coffee because that's what you're good for.
Yeah,
right.
And I think that there's a very different feeling. I mean, we've all know each other well enough that we could probably say something, you know, that somebody on the outside looking in would sit there and go,
cringe.
I can't believe you just said that, and we're laughing because we get the joke.
Yeah,
yeah.
Exactly. And that's the difference between friends and, you know, because, I mean, Peggy doesn't really have any friends at the office.
No.
You know.
She doesn't really have any friends at the Griffith either.
Yeah, that's true. No. Well, she might. She might have one.
She's got one.
As far as we know.
Bum, bum,
bum, bum. But, I mean, the fact that none of them are... For the most part, everyone in there is looking at her, and when they say that sort of thing, and they treat her like she's a second-class citizen, when they treat her like someone who, oh, yeah, well, you know, that was the war. Now you're, you know, give me my coffee. Pick up the sandwich order. There's no sense of, you know, play. These aren't friends.
And we do get that scene where Jarvis basically calls her on it and says, look, you are working in an office where everybody treats you like furniture. Mm-hmm. and why do you put up with it? And she flat out tells him, I'm going to prove myself. You know, there is going to be a change. And we do get that in this episode where, at least on certain levels, she does prove herself both to Thompson and to Dooley in her work in Russia.
Well, what's interesting is that in the case of both Thompson and Dooley, is that for episode after episode after episode, where we've been basically having these two guys be less than stellar agents, mm-hmm. investigatory...
intellectually challenged.
Yeah.
The last two episodes have really just sat there and went, okay, we've painted these guys as bumbling idiots, and now we're going to tell you why they're not.
Makes that harder to buy.
It's the problem. That's the problem. Yeah. Although, I mean, this episode especially, I liked the way both of them were portrayed.
Yeah.
Because suddenly both of them had depth, and both of them had layers of complexity to the characters. Dooley is not automatically sitting there going, Stark is evil, Stark is this. Dooley's thinking about the possibility that Stark might be being set up.
Right. And mm-hmm. he even says as much to Jarvis when he says, right. mm-hmm. I don't care. You know, this is not us trying to railroad Howard Stark. I want to know the truth.
Mm-hmm. This is You've the got first story time that story. He's actually said anything remotely like that he wanted the truth. Because in previous episodes, it was just, Stark's our man, I want Stark.
Right. Well, because, you know, granted, everything up to this point has pointed toward Howard Stark being involved in some way, shape, or form.
But he wasn't looking for any other options.
Right, well, that's, and the other thing is that you end up... Stark is getting railroaded the same way that Peggy is getting railroaded into an idea of who they are, ignoring in both cases the history of the people involved.
Right.
Peggy fought, not secretaried her way through World War II, not fetched the coffee through World War II.
Something she pointed out to Dooley and said, I've been there.
Yeah, she fought in World War II. She fought in Europe. She fought in Russia. She fought beside Captain America. She fought Nazis, and she fought Hydra. Everybody ignores this. Go get the coffee.
Well,
Stark fought during the war. He helped create Captain America. Mm-hmm. He did all these things. But oh no! After the war, suddenly he's only in it for the money, and you know he betray America.
Well, yeah.
Well, some of that.
Huh?
Some of that actually does mimic the real world, though, because a lot of the industrialists who built up the war machine were seen as profiteers afterwards. And then, whereas Agent Carter is, you got to keep in mind, it follows along with the whole, during the war, there was the Rosie the Riveter, we can do this, and then as soon as the war was over, it's back to the kitchen.
Well, sure,
but as we've pointed out before, that's been so... exaggerated
in the show it has
to the point where it's almost ridiculous, and now they've got to dial back from that.
Well, the real problem is that the SSR knows better.
They should.
This is the organization that should, even recognizing that, because when the men came back from the war, when the women came back from the war, the women who were working in the factories and doing all the jobs suddenly had to leave those jobs, and it was, you know...
Which actually was mentioned in the very first episode.
Sure, but the SSR knows better.
Yeah.
I mean,
They know Peggy's record. They should know Peggy's record.
And so they
although,
you know...
Although it seems that... What's his name? Scala? The guy with the crutch.
Sousa.
He's the only person that I think has actually read her record.
Which is another problem
there. Well, that's what I mean.
But Dan, you're quite right. I mean, the war profiteer, but at the same time, it's like everyone was so quick to leap to that. I mean, just because Stark's kind of a jerk, he automatically was going to betray America.
Right.
You know, so.
Speaking of which, while Peggy's over in Russia, talking about betrayal and spies and whatnot, we get a little bit more with Dottie tonight. Dottie the ballerina. Dottie the extremely tall ballerina.
Mm-hmm. The totally non-ballerina.
Extremely tall Russian agent ballerina.
Who seems to enjoy her own bondage for
and
some
wants
reason.
To see wants to see the, and we get that scene at the beginning where she's, you know, asking Peggy, you know, where, how do I get to see New York and all of this. And that was a nice touch for her to say, start in Brooklyn.
Right.
Because Brooklyn, Yes. Just a kid from Brooklyn. So I don't think that was just a coincidence.
No,
I'm sure.
Of course not.
So Dottie knocks over Peggy's purse, gets her keys, does a search for the apartment, looking for stuff. Mm-hmm. Stuff and things.
And that was one of the things that bothered me. Why wasn't Agent Carter, why wasn't she a little more aware when that happened, when her purse got knocked over? Why wasn't she the one to get down and get her things? I mean, she allowed this.
Dottie beat her to it.
Yeah, but Agent Carter is supposed to be this super duper, really smart woman, and she doesn't notice that her key was nicked.
Well, then again, she thinks that the other gal thought he's a ballerina, and really? She's also trained.
But
to
at the same time, though, that happened right before Peggy leaves for Russia, so she didn't go back to her apartment
because there wouldn't be
any reason for her to know that her key's missing because she's not having any need to use it yet.
Yeah, but my point is that I think that somebody who is this well trained would. Be more observant and watch what was going on when her stuff was being picked up.
Dottie is also very well trained, and she's basically infiltrating.
Mm-hmm.
She's gotten Peggy to let down her guard.
She's the wide-eyed, innocent newcomer to New York, and she's so excited to see all the sights. And
God,
she
should be setting off all of Peggy's alarms.
Right.
<Could be. laughs> Yeah, really. True.
It's like, well, yes, we can be friends. Let me do a background check real quick. But yeah, it is interesting that she does this. She searches Peggy's apartment and finds the photographs that Peggy snapped in the lab with the
world's loudest camera pen.
Yes, and as you pointed out, Tim, I'll let you point it out because I'm not gonna steal your thunder. But you noticed.
Yeah. Well, yeah, the very simple fact that as soon as she found something, she stopped looking.
Yeah.
Which is terrible, terrible, terrible tradecraft. And if you're hunting for something and you just stop, yeah. And not to mention the fact that she pointedly did not look behind anything on the walls. So
pictures, she didn't find
the
Captain America's super soldier
hole in the wall.
Yeah.
Which curiously, again, nobody heard her knocking a hole in the wall.
Well, she did turn on the radio.
Well, that's true. And of course, there's no vibration that goes with anything when you're breaking a hole in the wall, which people would notice. But so it's very much a hand of the writer. It's like, oh, I found the thing. Ha, I'm done. I can go now.
Yeah.
Without looking behind any of the pictures on the walls. Especially considering
But it's interesting, though. It's almost as if she was looking for that specific thing because she mm-hmm. found the... She looked
she
through
only
the photographs.
One photograph,
she takes
too.
One photograph of something. And
right.
I didn't really get a good look at the label that was on the box in the
stark,
photograph.
Stark. Something
it was
stark.
All
yeah.
of it was stark. But oh. There's something specific in that box. That the Russians are interested in, and I don't think Dottie was tasked to find, just find what you can find. I think she was looking for that particular thing, and she finds it. Okay, I have it now. I can leave. And of course, you're on a limited time frame. You don't know when Peggy's going to get back. She has no idea that Peggy's gone to Russia.
Right.
and while and over in Russia, they discover. This Russian engineer, this Russian crazy engineer.
Well, they discover the school where these children are being brainwashed and
yes, and
shackled to
and
their beds.
And there's a girl there.
She ain't just any old girl.
Who do you think she is?
She's it's little Miss Stabby.
She's very she was a very stabby little thing. She likes
she's
her,
a destructive
some sharpness.
Girl.
She knows how to make her point.
Ha.
Well, we have is
ho,
that
ho, ho, ho.
Eva in the credits list on IMDb? We've got Eva, we've got young Dottie, we've got Anya. So one of those, it's either Eva or Anya was the one that they found in the school, who stabbed Dum Dum, and
only one child.
Yeah. That has to be a plan. She's got to be there for some particular reason.
I guess to stab.
Well, the fact that they knew, they realized that this whole thing is a trap.
Right.
Because
they knew there was a good chance
of
that as they were, when they set out to go there. But
right. So they get there. They find the girl. Girl gets stabby and shooty and dangerous and stuff. And it's an easy assumption to make that she is at least a predecessor to Natasha Romanoff.
Yeah, I mean, we were kind of looking at this and thinking, boy, wouldn't it be interesting if this was actually Natasha? You know, because in the comics, in the 616 comic book universe, Natasha is, you know, she fought in World War II. No, this would be. You
She's
know,
very long lived.
Very long lived. So, but this is, this does not, no indications this is actually Natasha.
No, and from the credits, we've got, you know, like I said, Eva or Anya is that girl, because the other one would be Dottie. Who is right. you know right. the very tall ballerina in ballerina. The next in the room next door?
I want to go back to Dottie in Carter's room for a minute. Remember when she sits at the mirror and she sees yes. Captain America and she mimics mm-hmm. her voice? I wonder if that's not setting up something later.
Oh, I'm sure it is. Yeah, I'm sure it's going to be doing something. And I'm wondering if the other part of this episode is setting up with Dr. Ivchenko, who was a psychiatrist tasked to keep mad scientist engineer sane, while they're building some weapon designed by Howard Stark using Howard Stark schematics.
Right.
Of course, they sit there and they say, Howard Stark's not involved with this. They stole plans and good here. If they were working with Stark, they wouldn't need me.
Right.
And they makes their escape, and everything, like you said, Tim, everything changes at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Thompson's relationship with Peggy changes because Thompson, the war hero, reveals to her that he's not actually really a war hero because what everybody thinks he did, he didn't do.
Mm-hmm.
You've got Sousa back home recognizing her. A bullet wound on her shoulder and putting two and two together and figuring out that she was the blonde in the photographs, what stole the other Stark thing, that the implosion
right.
device
right.
thing. So now he's doing things. And something I forgot to point out last week, because we saw this, Sousa pulling in a Lois Lane, taking the pencil and that photograph of the blonde and coloring right. in the hair dark, like Lois Lane did in the Donner cut of Superman 2.
Right.
When she figures out, she draws a picture on Superman. Hey, glasses and a tie and a suit and a hat. Hey, wait a minute. It's Clark Kent. That would have been so much fun to see in the theaters.
Oh, yeah.
The Richard Donner cut yeah. of Superman 2. Anyway, I digress. Okay, so that's the basic setup of the episode. That's the overall what's happened this time. Very interesting dynamic changes tonight in the relationships for everybody. When we get back, we will talk about those relationship changes and the implications for next week and how we all feel this is kind of going compared to previous weeks. So everybody stand by. Level 117 will continue after this.
You're listening to Sci-Fi for Me Radio, because we're awesome, and you're getting awesomer.
All right, you all listening to Level 117, you are no doubt true believers of some stripe, as are we, and some of you are probably even fans of the Distinguished Competition. So, now that the first wave of DC Comics television shows are on the air, it's time to talk about them. Our new DC TV podcast, we call it The Rogues Gallery. And you can hear that same place you hear everything else, right here on Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
Hey everyone, Leslie Walker of Sci-Fi for Me here, just to give you a little reminder that our super smart crew members share their thoughts weekly on the DC shows Gotham, The Flash, and Arrow. Check out our podcast where we discuss these shows and story arcs, character development, plot twists, misses, and wins. Or if you'd rather check in for a quick recap read, we have you covered there as well. So, join us for some DC-flavored morsels at sci-fi4me.com, your portal to the science fiction multiverse.
And now, back to Level 117, the only 100% Hydra-free podcast on the internet. Hail Hydra.
Back on Level 117, Jason Hunt here along with Maya Aids.
Yo-de-yo.
Dan Hanley.
Hello.
Timothy Harvey.
Hello.
And we are discussing The Iron Ceiling, episode of Agent Carter tonight on ABC.
What episode number is this?
This is episode number five.
So there's two more?
There's three more left.
Three more.
And in the next episode,
Agent Carter is a traitor.
Everybody's a traitor on this show. Howard Stark, Peggy, point. Come on.
And where do they
Jarvis?
Oh, wait.
I'm just waiting for the three of you to turn on me.
Waiting.
Hold on. Let me turn around here.
Say waiting. I don't know what you're waiting for. Yeah. It's like, you know.
I thought he accused us of that weekly.
Well, you know.
Most of that's off air, though. And it's usually a lot of screaming and how could you do this to me?
What do you mean it's late?
In this environment, though, it's really kind of hard to turn traitor. The only turnabout we can do is just turn our backs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, now the interesting thing on this is that where it looks like this is coming from is going to be Sousa.
Mm-hmm.
Figuring out. For whatever, however, you know, he's putting pieces together, he figures out that Peggy is, what, maybe a double agent? He figures out that she's doing something because she stole the explosive device.
Right.
They probably think that she killed the guy that was up there.
Well, I'm wondering if they think she's working for Leviathan. Because the only thing that makes sense is for her to be there, and they're doing that, and they don't take into account that she could be doing something for Howard.
I think here's what's going to concern me is that when we get to this point, when this happens, is it going to be you realize this is probably Peggy? Well, she's guilty. Let's go. You know, are we going to get that immediate kind of?
Well, we got that with Stark.
Don't you think so?
Well, yeah, and that concerns me because, to be perfectly honest, there's that's going to be one of those.
You,
moments when I just want to
moron.
Reach through
Why
the TV
can't you look
and,
at...
and shake, find, reach to the TV around the side of the set, grab the writer, mm-hmm. and go.
Well, when you get a sense of betrayal, though, it's easy to turn on somebody like that.
Yeah, but I mean, the thing is that she has just proven herself, and she's proven herself, and she's been consistently there, and they're finally realizing this, and to immediately assume that she's guilty. We haven't gotten this yet. We haven't seen the episode. It hasn't aired. But at the same time, if that's where we go...
That would be bad.
Because suddenly, I mean, I don't know. It's just like these last... It's like they suddenly realized they were spinning their wheels a little.
I think...
And now you have to get through the rest of it. You have to go, finish the story.
You know what it feels like to me? And you know, I'm probably going to get hit with all sorts of... white male privilege mud thrown at me for this, but it feels like the first few episodes were written in a way to cater to the male bashing feminist group, Mary Sue people.
Keep going.
Because now it's not there. It's okay. We've thrown the red meat at the feminist group. Now we can get past this, and we can actually smarten up our guys a little bit, and we can tell our story, and not have to worry about all the guys being dumb because now we can start adding layers because we had this problem with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. with the first few episodes where all of the characters were cardboard cutouts, and then they started adding layers.
Yeah, the problem is they only have 8 episodes to do this in.
I know, but. You look at the media hype going into Agent Carter. You look at the media hype through the beginning of Agent Carter.
Mm-hmm.
Feminist icon, the female lead, and all of this story. And there was a huge big to-do that was made about the fact that there was a woman lead character in the Marvel show.
Did they manage to get their positive review in Lilith Fair? That's the big question.
Well, here's
see, okay. And that's what I think. And it's not all... That's not... all of everything from these episodes, but I think that drove more of it than it should in the writing.
I think that's an interpretation you could make. I think it's a little bit further than I would go, for the very simple fact that the reason that we were getting, feminist, female lead, all those things, is because it's been very, very aware that Marvel didn't have one.
Right.
Okay, so this is so it becomes a big deal because it became a big deal. Already a thing. It was a thing before the show happened. And there was already a thing of going, okay, we've got, you know.
We've been talking about it for quite a while here.
So yes, it becomes a big deal when you have got a show, when you got a when you're talking about a cinematic universe where mm-hmm. you don't have a female lead. Hold on, I'm not done. You just wait.
I have a button over here.
You do. So it becomes a thing. So now, as much as, and believe me, we've recorded it. My voice has been taped saying, you know, they're beating us over the head with, you know, how awful they are to her.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, we get the point. There's two things I think they're doing wrong here. One is that they're not trusting the audience to remember or to know what the world was like in the late 40s.
Have to remember that everybody's got not even an eighth grade level education anymore.
Except they do. It's not trusting your audience.
Right.
It's not trusting your audience to know that. And secondly, it's not trusting your audience to recognize that, yes, the world that she was living in as a woman in 1946... was not a world that was particularly friendly to a smart, capable woman in a world where all the guys had come back from the war.
Yeah.
You, instead of taking the time, which they could have done, they actually could have spent an episode building this world. Yeah. They did not do a whole lot of world building here, not really. And instead of taking that time to sit there and say, this is the world that Peggy is inhabiting, instead we got, women aren't worth anything. You know,
feminist shorthand.
It's shorthand, and the problem with the shorthand is, and we've talked about this. We've talked about this at H2O a few times. Is that shorthand is great to get your point across like that.
Yeah.
The problem is that when you've got more than that long to tell your story, shorthand kind of sucks because it comes back to bite you because all of a sudden you've not given any depth.
Well, you've cheapened your characters.
And so when you get to this point where we are five episodes in,
yep. Yes,
five episodes in, and suddenly this episode and last episode, we're getting depth to Dooley.
Well, to your point that Marvel Cinematic Universe has been absent a female lead up until this point. And there was a lot of hay being made about all of that.
Mm-hmm.
I would go even further than that and say that just in general, not just limited to the Marvel Cinematic Universe, overall, you know, women in Hollywood discussion that's going on for the last 6-8 months, you know, that's just been, well, it's been intensified in the last, you know, year or so, less than that. Where it's all, you know, Hollywood is terrible for women and da 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 da. We've just been pounded with this in the media, not just with regard to Marvel, but with regard to everything that Hollywood is doing. You know, why can't we have more Katniss Everdeen? You know, Katniss, you know, and they're holding that up as the standard. You know, they're sitting there saying, why can't we have more of this? Well, why can't we have more of that? Okay, fine. But the way it's played into Agent Carter, I think it goes back to my original point that we've just been beaten over the head with this whole men are stupid thing, men treat women badly thing, and it got to the point where we were beaten over the head with it in the show.
But they're not writing. You're not going to make a show like this when you've only got 8 episodes.
Right.
You're not going to write a script and then wait to write the next script. These scripts were written.
Oh, I know.
There's no reason. There's no logical reason as a writer. Now, admittedly, I just said there's no logical reason as a writer. And
don't you be bringing logic into this?
This is a show that does not understand what a one-time pad is. Now, admittedly, a lot of the audience doesn't understand a one-time pet either, unless you know anything about.
I think the words "one time" kind of gives away.
Spycraft. So it's just I'm pretty amazed that Peggy could actually break that code without any reference point. Considering that's the whole point of a one-time pet is that you can never do that.
That's right.
But oh well. But the thing is that I think they set themselves up for exactly the kind of response you're having.
Yeah, I think so.
I think they set themselves up for that, and I can almost guarantee you that they were just too clumsy to make this work any other way.
I wonder if they were sitting there saying, okay, we have this female lead. I still think that they were writing to appease the feminist bloc.
Here's the thing. We know that while there are a great many women, of every age who like comic books, mm-hmm. who like the Marvel Universe, they're still writing for guys because that's what they do. Even Marvel, which has got a pretty good track record, they still write for guys.
And they're not going to change because it's working for them.
I'm okay with that. Just because they're writing for guys doesn't mean that females don't enjoy the stories.
Right.
Right?
But I think that...
So you don't have to write a comic... There are comic books written specifically for women or for females, but you don't. Anyway,
I think I think to your point, and this goes back to something that you've said over and over again. I think one of the reasons why the Marvel Cinematic Universe works as well as it does is not necessarily the fact that it's being written for guys, is the fact that the stories are being told well.
Mm-hmm. And
you've got a broad appeal to the audience. It doesn't matter. You're not writing to specifically that 14-year-old boy who sits in his mom's basement. You're writing for a general audience,
mm-hmm.
and you're trying to tell a good story with characters that have depth. And that even goes back to what we've been talking about here, the fact that Dooley and Thompson now finally get some depth to them. And I'm a little concerned that this is going to be Marvel's model going into Daredevil and Jessica Jones, is that we get two-dimensional characters for the first 3 or 4 or 5 episodes in order to establish the archetypes and then play with them. Because they did it with S.H.I.E.L.D., and they've done it now with Carter, and
two things.
What happens next?
Oh, go ahead, Dan.
Well, you were talking about, you know, kind of bashing us over the head with the whole, here's the woman character. Well,
right.
I kind of see it a little bit differently than... even you all do, because to me it was not as much about the feminist thing as it was it was sloppy, very sloppy, but it was trying to make the others look like idiots in order to make the main character look better, you know, and of course the whole feminist thing came in. Now as for the marketing, to me, I don't think that was necessarily tied to the MCU as it was a bunch of marketing guys at ABC playing on it, and that's probably tainted a lot of people's view going into it.
Could be.
Saying that now they're bashing us over the head because of the marketing when that was just ABC doing their thing.
Oh, well, I wasn't thinking anything about the marketing. I mean, the marketing is going to be, you're going to show her in the skirt and you're going to put the hat on and she's going to be, you know, curvy and whatever. It's the writing inside the episodes. I'm specifically looking at
I think it was just a sloppy way of emphasizing the superiority of the character by making everybody else look lesser.
I think there's a lot of that too.
Yeah. I will just point out a couple of things. There are, and of course I don't see a listing here for who the writers are, but the show is mostly produced by guys.
Not the top two.
Created by Christopher Marcus and Stephen McFeely.
Created by, but they're not the showrunners.
Executive producers.
The two showrunners are women.
Actually, there's executive producers, of which there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. How many of them actually are
the showrunners? Are women.
Yeah.
There are two of them.
Mm-hmm.
They get their slate at the end of the show.
Mm-hmm.
They are the ones in charge.
Uh-huh. But are they writing the episodes?
No. But they're the showrunners.
Okay,
but they break down the entire season.
Okay, but you watch
this. And look, and I'm not saying that this is on purpose.
No. But here's the other thing.
It had to. Wait a minute. What are you saying? You're not saying is on purpose.
I'm saying the whole. Right for the feminist thing.
You don't think it's on purpose?
I think it's Hollywood politics.
I think you are reading far more into than you need to.
It could be. I will readily admit that my bias is in play here.
Here's why. Marvel has done a really, really good job telling hour and a half, 2 hour stories.
Yeah.
In film.
Yeah.
Okay. How many episodes of this show have we had?
Five.
Okay. How long is that?
5 hours. Well, yeah.
It's
not
two,
exactly.
It's two movies.
Okay. It's yeah.
It's two movies.
It's two movies with a story. And I think what we're really, really getting is they don't trust their audience in a way. And it's not even like we don't trust our audience. It's more like we're setting the film in the 1940s. They're setting the show in the 1940s. It was a different time. It was a different world. Things were different for men and women and da 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 da. We have to make that incredibly clear. Mm-hmm. We have to sit there and go, this is how it was.
But they made it. It was almost to the point that it was laughable. I mean, it becomes comedic.
That's the problem.
When you push something, when you take reality and you push it to its extreme, what do you get? Comedy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's what this became. It was like, oh, here we go with the slapstick again.
First third of the show is setting up this world.
Mm-hmm. But it didn't really do that.
Yeah, I know. Well, the thing is, it sets up
their world. It doesn't necessarily set up a good story universe.
So we start moving into this middle third where we start to get a sense of what this world is actually like for maybe the real people in it,
All
of a sudden we start to get a sense of who the characters are.
Right,
we get depth to the characters. The back third, it's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. again.
Yes,
the back third is going to sell everything. We're either this show is either going to work because we've got this middle third where we started a sense of who some of these characters are, and the back third we sit there and go, oh, awesome,
yeah,
that was fun,
or not.
Yeah,
or not.
And look forward to what they're setting up.
Well, yeah, because you're right, and this could be indicative of because what we've seen, the people have said about Daredevil and Jessica Jones, the fact that they're telling a 13-hour movie. Mm-hmm. It's entirely possible that the writing on this has been, let's tell an 8-hour, let's do an 8-hour movie. They're planning this with the idea that at some point you're going to binge watch it. And it's not...
God, that would be awful.
It's not one episode at a time. It's let's do the entire 8. And I think that's why, because you're right, it's broken up into 3 acts. Now we're going to get into the dark spaces.
Yeah, I don't think people are going to make it through the beginning to get the payoff at the end.
Well, and we saw with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., they didn't.
Right. They
abandoned the show in droves the first season, and some of them still haven't come back, even now, middle of season two.
Right. Last two episodes of this have improved.
Right.
But
that's like Tim was saying, this is act two.
The first three episodes, that's a lot to ask people to sit through.
Yeah.
To try to get to it being better.
Yeah, but that's the...
People don't have
that
kind of
patience. That's the first act. Your second act is your Empire Strikes Back, where everything gets dark. And the bad guys are winning. And then
we're
going to
get Ewoks
act.
In the third act? No!
Just so we...
Damn it!
Who's going to get their hand cut off?
But I think you're right. I think, and really, no matter which perspective you apply to the writing of the men are dumb, women are smart, all of that, it all still gets us to the same point where... Now we're getting the layers and it's late.
Yes.
It's late in coming to they're late coming to the party with that piece.
I don't like that. I want them to have good writing from the beginning.
Yeah, well, you would think that they would do that. And especially given the fact that the Marvel Cinematic Universe has been around for so long now.
Right.
And
that this is 8 episodes. You've only got 8 episodes to tell the whole thing. Don't lose your audience because you took the first 3 episodes to beat people over the head with stuff.
Now that we've beaten everybody in our audience over the head with this discussion, let's analyze the episode a little bit.
Hold on a second, real quick.
We're going to do some work.
I just want to make a comment here. The Muse, which is one of the Kinja, I think it's spun out of Jezebel. Which is where if you're interested in a feminist viewpoint or news stories and analysis written by women.
Yes.
Not necessarily for women. I found some great stuff on Jezebel. There's some neat stuff there every now and again. They looked at the first episode of this show, and they really enjoyed the first episode. I think we enjoyed the first episode too. We didn't realize we were quite getting beaten over the head with certain things.
Well, I thought it was only going to be the first episode.
Right. And I think that, yeah, I thought that was our establishment. But she, this is Aunt Sarah Jaffe is the reviewer here. She ends her review. This is the last paragraph. The first episode ends by challenging perhaps one of the most American myths of all. Agent Carter, in her rush to prove she's as good as the men and her fear of her work rebounding violently on her friends. Sound familiar? The superhero tropes tend to. Repeatedly rejects all offers of help. As Jarvis helps stitch up her cuts, he chides her for wanting to do everything herself without support. The man who's concerned about work-life balance knows better than Carter that being independent doesn't mean going it alone. One of the most important lessons Agent Carter, like so many male superheroes, will have to learn is how to accept help from others.
Interesting.
And you know what? Yeah, I could see that. I could very much see that coming out of the first episode watching that. And I think if the next episode had picked up from that,
it would have been a nice thing.
I think I would have been really good. That would have been really cool.
Except it didn't.
It did not. At all.
So I'm thinking
it was more coffee and sandwiches.
Yeah.
Not only more coffee and sandwiches, but way more of the, she was made to be smart and a good agent because everybody else was so inept.
Well, here's what I want to know is what took her so long? What we got tonight.
Yeah.
Honestly, if we'd picked up the episode, if we'd started the show with the first episode.
Mm-hmm. And skipped
to the last episode.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
And then went from here.
Yep. That's the Agent Carter we got in the one shot.
We got a couple of episodes. We got like three episodes of filler.
Yep.
Which, okay, you know, yes, I'm a writer. Okay, I've done this. You just sit there, you build a world. How many of my films are set in the 1930s or 40s? I make a lot of films that are set in this time period. Mm-hmm. You have to establish your world to some degree. There's always shorthand.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
I admit it.
Right.
You know, I'm not denying that you can't do but it's like, again, I just feel like they really didn't trust their audience, which is really odd because they've already primed their audience with Captain America.
I wonder if they got a little gun shy because of what happened with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. the first season.
But don't repeat the same mistake you made.
Yeah.
By taking a shorter shooting schedule and then doing basically the same thing by spinning your wheels.
Well, yeah, Well, I mean that's where we are. Right? But I think you're right. I think if we had skipped two episodes, three episodes, and come right to here.
In fact, we're perfectly honest. We could sit there and go right from Howard Stark is accused of terrible things. Hi, Peggy. I'm Howard. I've been accused of terrible things. I'm okay, but I didn't do them. Oh, Howard, you jerk.
Yeah.
Moving on, you know? Yeah,
exactly right. And I think that there's been a missed opportunity. Well, like you were saying before, you know, there is a missed opportunity here in that the writers of this show have ignored, just as much as the SSR, the writers of the show have ignored Peggy's history.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And Howard's history with regard to their time spent in the SSR during World War II, fighting with Captain America.
In fact, it seems to me that people on the show in general are lax in checking out people's past.
You almost want to sit them down in a room and say, did you watch Captain America the first time? I mean, the guys who helped develop the show directed that movie, or wrote that movie.
Mm-hmm.
So they should know a little bit. Did you watch Captain America, the First Avenger? Go watch it again, please. Context. And that's what it is. There's a lack of context. This show is not connected to Captain America, the First Avenger. Until tonight with the Howling Commandos.
Well, we go from the radio show, which you could imagine driving Peggy nuts. Because it's
and that's gone.
It's such a parody of what she went through.
It's the four color.
It's the version.
Yeah. Well, and that would have been so much. That would have been a fun bit to keep having that, mm-hmm. and it disappeared after the first couple episodes. It's gone. Yeah.
I think that honestly, we went from this. I don't know. We are belaboring the point, but the fact of the matter is, it's really bothering us. Well, I think it's fair that it's bothering us because we have a show where you do have a strong female lead. And she came out of, she was the female lead of Captain America, the First Avenger.
Yep.
Okay. She was a strong character then. She was taking.
Everybody loved her.
She was taking no crap from any of the boys. Didn't matter how smart and how much money they had or how, you know, how strong they were. She established herself as being a character who was capable and mm-hmm. efficient and a good agent.
And I think the moment for everybody in the audience for that, the moment where she had the audience was hers, is when she picked up the gun and fired it at Steve Rogers.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes, it works just fine. That was her moment. And that's when the audience bought it. Mm-hmm. And they said, yep, we like her.
And then we got the little teasers and all the little thing where, you know, she goes down to the office and beats up the guys on the dock and, you know, all that stuff. And they primed us for this. And I think that maybe that's what we need to do. We need to go, when this is done, mm-hmm. let's watch the show from and skip second, third, and fourth episodes. Let's just skip them. Let's just watch the show back to back.
That makes sense.
And I bet it's going to flow. I mean, we may have some story flow problems, but I think in terms of her character.
Everybody's character.
Everybody's character, because we're going to go from her.
Actually have characters.
You're going to look at her. She's in an office where no one's taking her seriously. Mm-hmm. And then the next episode, we have her starting to assert herself. We have this episode where she's going, no, seriously, I was an agent in the war.
Yeah.
I know how to shoot people and everything. And oh, by the way, despite the fact I don't know how a one pad really works, I'm going to break this code for you in a way that nobody can actually do. But I'm going to do that, and we're going to Russia, and I'm going to get the kid. And everyone sit there and go, oh, Peggy Carter, that's right. You are a badass. Sorry.
Yeah.
We're kind of guys. It's the 40s. We're, you know, give us 10, 15 years and we'll be a little bit better. But yeah, it's frustrating because it's a writing problem.
Which makes me wonder, because this show has had that problem. S.H.I.E.L.D. has had that problem. I've seen this problem on other shows. Are we not bringing up good script writers?
Here's the problem. Here's the problem is I think that every story has its own length.
Yes.
Okay. And not every story, they don't have 8 episodes of story.
So they just padded.
Mm-hmm. They got 6. They have 6 episodes of story.
And they padded.
Really? I think you could have condensed.
I'm gonna commit a little bit of heresy here.
Oh. Oh dear. Speak your heresy and we will determine whether or not you are banished to the deepest reaches. You're forced to watch the first half of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. all over again.
As long as I don't have to face Basement Cat, I'll be fine.
You're in the basement. I will bring you a cat.
I've had a basement and a cat but in the basement.
Basement Cat.
I'm wondering if, and this is specific just to the Marvel stuff,
mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if we're running into now a Whedon problem. Because Whedon, you know, Firefly made Whedon God in the eyes of a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. Buffy did that before Firefly.
But Firefly sealed it.
Oh, yeah.
And Joss Whedon can do no wrong, even though Dollhouse didn't work for a lot of people.
Mm.
And
watched it. I had no interest.
Yeah. And you've got Angel, which was hit and miss. And now he does the Avengers and makes $1 billion. Joss Whedon can do no wrong again. And so what do we now have in the television universe? We have a show that's run by Joss Whedon's brother and his wife with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. We have now a show that's run by the two people that ran Dollhouse for mm-hmm. Whedon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've got Whedon people in charge of all of this stuff.
The fingers are in the pies.
And I'm not going to say that they're bad writers. You know, it's all Whedon.
Right, right.
But, you know, from reading the biography that Amy Pascal did on Joss Whedon, there's a certain frequency, and there's a certain rhythm that you have to be able to understand when you're working on a Whedon project. And these people are used to working on Whedon projects and not Marvel projects. And I'm wondering just how much of an impact that has on all of this. know.
Well,
I don't know if it does or not. I'm just throwing that out there for thoughts and comments. I mean, if you guys, you people listening, you have opinions too, I'm sure.
Well,
you know, it's not just the four of us here in the room.
When we look at some of his previous work, especially like Firefly, we didn't have this trouble with the buildup that we're having on this one. It floats. It seemed to flow pretty good.
Well, Firefly had an established universe.
Well,
in the show.
Well, but Firefly had an established original universe. So they were basically they were making it. So we're operating in a fixed world. We have an idea, right or wrong, of what the 1940s were like. Mm-hmm. Most of it's, you know, from Bogart movies, or we get a lot of that from the movies from the time, from Casablanca, from The Thin Man, all that sort of thing. And they're wrong, because that's movies. It's not real life. Real life was much more complicated and much more messy. But we have an idea, which is why we get the shorthand that we get, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
I'm looking at this thing here. The showrunners turned to several different influences outside of the Marvel in developing this series, including Raiders of the Lost Ark, L.A. Confidential, and the works of author James Ellroy. And I'm reading this, and I'm going, no, they didn't. because I don't see... James Ellroy? James Ellroy? Have you read James Ellroy? James Ellroy is dark, and he's an amazing writer. But this is not... There is no... The depth of no, L.A. Confidential, maybe for the visual sense.
Yeah,
Raiders of the Lost Ark, maybe the visual sense. Maybe for Raiders of the Lost Ark. Yeah, I can see a lot more.
A little bit of the story beats for that.
But it's like, you know, it's frustrating. It's just frustrating. I think it's less Joss Whedon, and the idea. I think honestly, they just because he's already talking about the fact that he needs to leave. He's already discussing the fact that he has not played in his own original universe for a while.
Yes.
And he needs to do that. He needs to do that as a creative person, as his own self. He's got to go off and tell his own stories. He's not, you know, he's done with Avengers 2 is it.
Right.
And he thinks about maybe he'll do another Marvel movie at some point because he likes the world. He's going to still be involved as much as he can, but he's done. He's got to step away. These people are it's not these people are bad storytellers. I mean, your first episode was written by the Captain America guys,
right?
You know, I'm not knocking some of these other folks for their writing in this. It's just I think they didn't know where to get. I don't think they knew how to get from A to B. No, I'm sorry, they didn't know how to get to A to C. They forgot what B was.
Yeah.
And that's the frustrating thing is that there's so much about this show that's actually really good. And the thing they did really, really well. This show is cast incredibly well.
Yeah, that is true.
Great cast. Even, you know...
Even the minor characters.
Now that Dooley's finally looking at people...
Yeah.
as Jason pointed out, once you notice he has a tendency... And I wonder what that actually is, because it is a thing.
It's an affectation of sort. It's.
I know people who have real difficulty making eye contact.
Stop
looking at me.
Exactly. And so it's a kind of, I don't know, but it's very interesting. But it's a good cast. When they're written well, like tonight.
Yep.
Tonight. First episode, last episode, this one, tonight episode. Everybody does a really good job.
Yeah.
And Carter is still an interesting character. She's an interesting character in an interesting time. Stark is an interesting character. There's all these Jarvis is, we finally get a Jarvis, an Edwin Jarvis. And he's fun.
Yeah.
Tonight, when he starts to reach up, tell his lie, because he's got his tell, and he starts to reach up for his ear, and he catches himself.
Yeah.
It's like, you saw that. In fact, his hand doesn't even get that high. It's just high enough for you to go, oh, hey, that's where he's going for. His speech to Peggy, you know, we're basically... Him saying, why are you doing this? And the speech that he should have given Peggy, episode 2.
Right.
Yep. It's a continuation of what he started at the end of the first episode.
Right. What he started in. Yeah. So we just could have, like you said, cut out those episodes. Yeah.
That's just crazy.
Yeah. So in the last 10 minutes, let's analyze the episode a little bit.
I don't think there's anything left of the episode. I think
it was fun to see the Howling Commandos.
Way fun.
Even though the fact that most of them are not the Howling Commandos from the movie. But that's okay.
That's okay.
They're still the Howling Commandos.
And they did a good job of not letting you see them that long or that well so that it wasn't as obvious.
Right.
I think they did a good job.
What's interesting is that you know, they stay in Russia.
Yeah.
At the end of the episode.
Well, now wait, no, because
hang on.
Because they
no,
started
they, no, they no, they're in Poland now.
They're in Poland.
Right, but
they meet them in Poland. They cross into Russia. They do their stuff.
They go back to Poland, but they're going to stay.
So they're going
to
get
without any real mission.
Right.
Without anybody in charge. Without anybody in the mortars.
Yeah.
they've met the military, haven't they?
they're the Lost Boys.
As much as he likes bourbon, he's staying for the vodka.
I think though. I wonder if this could be an extension, you know, where the Howling Commandos is this elite task force that gets sent, kind of like the Rangers or the SEAL Team 6 or the type.
Sure, but all those guys respond to orders. I mean, and so right. You know,
and they're based somewhere in Poland.
Sure, but remember that Peggy calls up a military unit and says, "I want you to go here." And the military unit. In a military chain of command, says, yeah, sure, no problem.
However, we don't know who she called.
That's true.
She could have called General Tommy Lee Jones. I was going to say General Ross, and I was like, that's not right. That's not right. That's Hulk.
She could have called Tommy Lee Jones.
She called.
That's what this show
needs.
Could
have been MacArthur.
We need a Tommy Lee Jones cameo.
Oh, that would be fun. Oh, that would
be cool.
Damn it, Carter.
Why is she fetching coffee? I don't need her giving
What's
me coffee.
With you people?
Yeah. That would be fun. What was his name? Oh, that's going to bug me now. All right. Everybody just kind of vamp for a little bit while I look this up. Let's talk for a little bit about Dottie.
Okay.
Dottie is...
She's an odd duck.
Spy.
Yeah. I think there's going to be... I don't know how they're going to get it done in the time that they have left, but she seems to have a lot more to... More story to tell. The whole handcuffing herself to her own bed at night.
That's a conditioning thing. That's a psychological thing, I think.
Maybe. Yeah,
that's like the only way she can sleep.
Maybe she's like Fiona and she changes into something else at night and that's why she has to handcuff herself to the bed.
Oh, see, that would just be, that would be really, really cool.
She's taken some kind of serum thing and they change into something else at night. And that's why they handcuff them all to their beds.
Colonel Phillips, yeah. I think Peggy called Colonel Phillips.
Oh, he's not a colonel anymore, you know.
No, he's just General Phillips.
Yeah. I thought that was really interesting. I thought it was a nice touch, actually, that she...
Still does that.
She still does that. And the fact that she, well, okay. Does she know what she has with the knockout lipstick?
I don't think she, well, she sniffed it and then she grinned like she knew what it was.
But does it? It was really ambiguous and I thought that was really cool because she might not know, in which case it's going to come back to bite her. but at the same time, I was like,
Wait. Come back to bite her. Are you expecting Dottie to try to kiss Peggy?
I'm saying, when it'll be something. It'll be, she'll use it.
At the wrong moment.
At the wrong moment. Somehow yeah. it'll be.
But she didn't take it. She left it on the table.
But she knows it's there, and she was copying her the accent for.
There's something about it. I don't know. We'll see if it's. It could just be. She thought it was interesting, and you know, but it's one of those things where it's not quite a Chekhov's gun, but
that smile was a knowing smile.
Yeah, yeah.
So, it's also she was imitating Peggy Carter, mm-hmm. and so mm-hmm. this kind of maybe it, this gave her a little more insight into the character of her.
It could be. I'm wondering what that was about though, because there's no way that she's going to be able to impersonate Peggy Carter at any point.
She actually looked quite a bit like her when she sat there in front of the mirror and did her voice the way they had they had her hair and
she's taller,
but if
she's slimmer,
if she's going to try and infiltrate to somewhere that doesn't really, that maybe knows who she is, but doesn't really know her well.
Who she is. Yeah. That's true.
Like if she was going in somewhere where they just know her name that she's British.
I'm thinking something that they will never do.
They might.
Oh, they get to the end of the series.
What do you think? What do you
get to the end of the series and Peggy dies and she's replaced by a Russian spy.
Oh.
And we get to, when Captain America rolls around and wakes up, that's not really Peggy in the hospital.
Except.
Dun, she, dun, dun.
We saw another soldier. It's a,
though. Yeah, except it was.
Yeah.
Are we sure?
Well, it wasn't Bridget Regan playing her. It was still Hayley Atwell.
Are you sure?
Surgery. Yeah.
They don't look that much alike.
No, they don't. But
surgery.
Wouldn't that
be a nice twist?
Wouldn't that just be like, wait a minute. Hello, this is the rug.
Yes.
And I'm just gonna
pay no attention to the plastic on the floor.
I'm just gonna pull this.
Yes.
Just a second. But still, I don't know.
At some point that storyline is gonna. I think that's gonna be part of the launching point that Peggy is a traitor type of thing that we're gonna get maybe next episode.
So you think Dottie is going to be the one that makes it appear that
possibly
Peggy did something when in fact she didn't. She was being impersonated.
Possibly. And I'm going to even go so far as to say that the stuff that we saw tonight in the promo, the whole Peggy is a traitor, guns pointed,
yes.
And da-da-da-da-da, yeah. That's first 10 minutes of the next episode. First 15 minutes. I don't think that's the end of the episode.
Okay, I hope it's not more than that.
I think that's the setup.
But see, again, the problem, that's going to be too quick. We're going to jump right into the, she's guilty.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be no soul searching. There's going to be no question. There's not going to be no
Okay, maybe first
debate.
20 minutes. But that's, I think that's in the beginning.
I want that to be the whole damn episode. I want the cliffhanger to be,
is she or isn't
she? Susan with the gun on her. So you can give a chance to sit there and go,
let it breathe a little bit.
Debate with discussion going, because quite frankly, shouldn't Thompson be going, there's no way. There's no way she is. Because he just had that moment with her where he really unburdened himself and she proved that she who she said she is, where she, the fact that she is Peggy Bloody Carter, who's, she's,
I was wondering what you were trying to get out there for a moment.
Well, it's just, I'm really, really afraid that what we're going to get is the,
flip. She's a traitor.
Yeah.
So the whole idea that it's going to be the first 10, 20 minutes is sort of your theory, because we haven't had a good theory in a while.
We haven't.
I think that's my theory.
What if it's a dream? Awesome. It's a dream sequence. The whole promo?
If we're going to go with dreams, then I'm standing with my Carter dies at the end.
Well, I'm going to modify my theory, all right?
Okay.
This is going to be, Sousa with the gun.
In the library.
In the first 10 minutes. In the library, yeah. Sousa with the gun in the alley. That's going to be the first 10 minutes.
Uh-huh.
And then we're going to get 24 hours earlier. And then we build the rest of the episode is going to build and do what you want. Build the case against her. Twist and twist and twist and all of this. And then we get back to gun in the alley at the end.
But you know what? Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. actually started to develop characters.
I know.
So they did kind of eventually give me what I want after.
And this show has started to give us characters, but.
Well, I'm.
If I'm right.
But how they would go from.
What shall I get out of all of you if I'm right?
No.
An acknowledgement that you are correct. Yeah.
We'll bow to you or something. We'll tip our hat.
The audience will be able to hear us bow to you on radio.
Give me back 10% of what I pay you.
I think I'm really, really thinking that they have not quite mastered the art of writing for short form. And when I say short form, 8 episodes, right?
Yeah.
1 hour at a time.
Yeah. I think there's a art form to it that American television writers do not have as much as, say, British writers do. Because the British have been doing it forever, right? 6 episodes, 8 episodes. They got shorter seasons. They have less money to play with.
Right.
And these and the people that are running the show, they're used to breaking down 22 episodes.
Mm-hmm.
I worry that we're not bringing in and developing really good script writers. That's my concern.
Well, that's an overall Hollywood problem.
I know.
And they all need to be reading Robert McKee more than anything else.
I think it's going to be very interesting to see what happens with Daredevil.
Yeah.
Or Jessica Jones.
How many episodes is 13 Daredevil? Apiece.
Yeah.
Okay.
They're 13 each.
Which is something
their approach to Daredevil is specifically this is a 13-hour movie. They are planning it for everybody to binge watch it when it hits April 10th.
That's going to make it possibly really not fun to watch 1 week at a time.
You're not going to watch it 1 week at a time because all 13
episodes. You can if you want.
You can if you want, but all 13 episodes are going to be out that same day.
If we're going to sit and do podcasts on it, we'll be watching it 1 week at a time.
No, we won't. We'll watch the whole, all 13 episodes and we can talk about it however many weeks we need to talk about it.
Okay.
But it's out.
God, that's going to be.
All 13 episodes are out the same day.
Do we bring sleeping bags to this?
You don't have to watch all 13 episodes.
No, you don't.
Okay.
But you will. Actually, yes, Maya. You personally have to watch all 13 episodes in a row. And I expect written notes.
Yes.
You will tweet every 5 minutes.
5 minutes?
We will handcuff you to the chair. But see, the thing about it is, though, it's going to affect the act structure.
Because we suspect you to be a Russian agent.
It's going to, it changes because you've got, every episode is a five-act structure.
Right.
You've got a beginning, a middle, and an end for every hour. And if you're writing a 13-hour movie as opposed to 13 one-hour stories, everything, all of the arcs and everything is going to be different.
Yes.
So it's not going to be written for you to watch it one at a time.
I could think how to do that, though. I think you could really...
You make each episode as a beat.
Well, each episode...
But they're trying to do that with Agent Carter, and it's not working.
They just have to do better.
But the thing is that Daredevil... There you go. The thing about Daredevil is that you could actually use
Does that actually work? Can I use that? Do better!
The thing about Daredevil is that you could use every episode to set up your characters.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. You could.
Your first episode is Matt Murdock's father. Because you have to establish Matt Murdock's dad to have Matt Murdock.
That's true.
And then you give Matt Murdock, and then you give Kingpin, and then you give Foggy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then you do, and then as you're building this, you've got everything is flashback, but you've got your through line story running through all of this, right?
Right.
Lost did this structure really, really well. It's not a bad lesson to take for something like that. When you're trying to set up characters, Carter doesn't have that benefit because we have one character, really. Howard showing up, great.
Yeah.
Jarvis showing up, fantastic. Peggy, that's all we've got. We've got Peggy Carter. Everybody else is pretty much invented for the show.
But they could have... They could have developed these characters, even if they are invented for the show. Still could have developed them some more and give them a little meat on their bones besides just
But they didn't.
No.
Not at this time. No.
No. And at this time, we will close out. Because it's a good discussion to have because I don't imagine that we're the only people on the planet that are talking about the deficiencies in the writing.
Mm-hmm.
At the points where they happen in the show, and it's sporadic. It's not consistent.
Yeah, it's not like we can look at the show and go, the whole show is bad.
No,
because
right?
that's not what we're saying.
No,
and this episode particularly, I think worked really well.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's the frustrating part.
Mm-hmm.
But this
you
episode,
see them get it.
This episode was closer and more like Captain America: The First Avenger than any other episode in the show so far, because they put her back on the front line doing what she was doing in that movie. And we get a completely different Peggy Carter. This is the one that works.
Right.
And now moving forward, hopefully we'll keep a little bit of her now when she comes back stateside.
Yeah.
We'll see.
I don't think this is the show that people expected. I think they probably expected us to talk more about the episode rather than the writing.
Well, but you know what? we were expecting something from the, something else from the second, third, and fourth episodes of
and we didn't get
Carter.
It.
And when we didn't get it, we burdened others with it.
That's right.
Well, exactly. See, the thing about it is, though, I mean, if the writing doesn't work, nothing else works.
No, I know.
You know, and when you talk about you know lipstick on a pig. If you write a bad story, if you write a bad script, no amount of special effects or brilliant acting or great cinematography is going to fix it.
It's garbage in, garbage out.
Exactly yep. right. Whereas if you've got, and you were telling us about some, what was it?
Low budget. British independent film called The Drift.
Yeah. Low budget and everything was kind of, you know.
Doctor, 1970s Doctor Who level sets, you know. Yeah. but the writing was really, really smart.
That's what makes everything work.
And I'm watching this movie going, these guys, who are these guys? These guys are great.
Yeah.
Not because the actors were great.
Yep.
The actors were okay.
And hopefully our audience is saying, these guys are great.
Yeah.
Every week when they listen to us. And we do thank you for listening.
Yes,
everybody.
We do.
And we hope that you're sharing links and saying, these guys are great. They're brilliant. The insights are just so staggeringly intelligent and wonderful.
Getting so worked up over the writing.
And life-changing.
Yes.
Every single episode.
Yes, we are a life-changing experience.
I wouldn't go that far, but okay.
No, I didn't say life-changing for the better, but just life-changing.
Yes. Okay, so if you would like to contribute your two cents into the conversation, you are more than welcome to leave a comment or send us an email, level1187@scififorme.com. You can join us on the social media. We are on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Pinterest, Google+, Tumblr, YouTube. I think that's it. Is that it?
I think so.
Yes, that's it. That's
Instagram?
Instagram.
What?
And what?
How can you Instagram a response to this?
You write it on a piece of paper and you take a picture.
This is where everybody can connect with you, can find us on social media.
Okay,
you know, being social with us and all that, what all. And that's going to do it for us this hour. Don't forget also, if you are of a mind to like the DC Comics universe, we do also have a podcast in that regard. It's called The Rogues Gallery, and this most recent episode was a special two-part discussion with Bob Rozakis, who was the Answer Man himself, former production director at DC Comics during the 80s and 90s, or 70s and 80s. Yeah, it was fun talking to him. So that is in our podcast list, which you can find over on iTunes or through OneCast, Double Twist, Stitcher. And, of course, we have the RSS feed over at our main site, which is scififorme.com. My aides, Dan Handley.
Good night.
Good night.
Tim Hart.
Good night.
And John Boy. And Mom.
Good night, John Boy.
All right. So that's going to do it for us. On behalf of everyone here at Sci-Fi for Me, it's Jason Hunt. Thank you for joining us, and we will be back next week.
This has been a presentation of SciFiForMe.com. Copyright 2015 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. This is Sci-Fi For Me Radio.